right, moving this thing into hour number two. We are efforting Rick Barnes. That is my next point of business. And I'll have that for you. 1-800-636-8686. I want to talk about another rule change in the NFL because everybody was all fired up about that. But we're still talking about Shohei. And Shohei meeting with the press yesterday and saying pretty much nothing. Except that his best old ex-friend scammed him, is a liar, is a thief, and took his money. And that he knew nothing about it until Wednesday. Where do you come out on that? Personally, I'm not going to put on the tinfoil hat. I don't think Shohei bet. I don't. It's my personal opinion. I don't have any factual knowledge. This is just an opinion. I do not think that he was the one making those bets. Now, of course, there's that common refrain. No bookie is going to extend a line of credit to anybody upwards of $4.5 million who makes between $300,000 and $500,000 a year. If, in fact, Ipe even makes that amount of money. I don't know if that's true. Whose word are we going to take for that? Ipe's? I'm guessing he didn't make that amount of money. I'm guessing he was not paid $500,000 a year to interpret for Shohei. But safe to assume, and this is not an original thought, safe to assume no illegal bookmaker is going to extend that line of credit without knowing who is behind the money, that they're good for it. So does that mean that Shohei was actually the one making the bets? I don't believe that necessarily. I'm not convinced of that. I have no tinfoil hat. And I really don't believe that he would bet on baseball if he was betting at all. And I don't think he was. But nobody would be that dumb. Not that guy. They might have been naive. They might have been sloppy. But there is no way the most famous baseball player in the world is betting on baseball. In my opinion. All right, back to the Sweet 16. I'll finish that thought in a minute. We are joined right now by the head basketball coach at Tennessee. He is in his ninth season there. He led the Texas Longhorns to the 2003 Final Four. He was the 2019 National Coach of the Year. He won the SEC regular season title in 2018. He won the SEC Tournament Championship in 2022. He has guided the Vols to the Sweet 16 in 2019 and last season, and they won the SEC regular season championship. They are the 2 seed in the Midwest. They are going to play the 3 seed. Great matchup. Creighton, Sweet 16, Friday in Detroit. My guest is Rick Barnes. Rick, it is great to have you back. How are you?
Hey, great, Jim. Hope you're doing well.
I'm doing well. Coach, great talking to you. So, Rick, when you and I spoke in February, you were talking about how tough it is to stack wins, especially playing in a conference as tough as the SEC. So that being said, how proud of you are you, or how proud are you of your guys for winning their first outright regular season SEC title since 08 and reaching your second straight Sweet 16?
Well, Jim, you know, every league talks about how tough their leagues are, and they really are. I don't care. Even when I was a head coach at George Mason in the Colonial, I know how hard it was to win games in that league. But think about our league this year. Going into the last week of the regular season, there was a possibility that there could be a 5-way tie for first place. And for us to be able to come out on top there, we won it by one game. And I think it was a 4-way tie for second place. But you know, I'm really proud of the effort that these guys did just because of they stuck together. You know, we had a tough stretch, you know, there with the way the league had. They wanted the top teams to play each other so we could help each other, possibly with the NCAA tournament seedings and all that. But we stayed with it. We did not play well at all in the SEC tournament, but I think what we've taken from that game is we were not shooting the ball well, and we got totally away from our game plan, and it turned really ugly for us. And since that, our last two games, we've really stayed together.
Rick Barnes is joining us. You know, Rick, I'm so glad you mentioned George Mason. I was actually going to ask you about that. For instance, your first head coaching job was at George Mason in 1987, and you've been a part of some really memorable tournament runs over the years. I know playing deep into March never, ever gets old, but given how long you've done this and the perspective you must now have, does it actually get better? Does it mean even more to you now than it did earlier in your career?
I think it does in the fact that you realize the longer you do it, how hard it is just to get to the tournament. And I've said it every year, and I think people laugh about it probably. You don't take it for granted. I mean, I've had some great coaches on my staff, great players that never got a chance to play in that tournament, and they talk about it with the team. Justin Gainey, our associate head coach, had a great career at NC State. He said, "Hey, guys, I never got to go dancing in the NCAA." And it's much harder than you think, and because I've had teams that they scratched and clawed just to get in it, and you get there, you still want more, obviously, and every round gets, it seems that each round gets more difficult. But it's something that I do. As I'm older, I realize it, that it's not easy to get there, and when you get there, it's tough to keep moving too.
You bet. Rick Barnes joining us. I mean, nothing's easy. Nothing is ever easy, and especially this time of year, and Saturday was no exception. If you were to go back to that, you were able to grind out a tough win over Texas. A lot of times when you think of your squad, we think of the firepower created by SEC Player of the Year, Dalton Knecht, but how pleased were you with how they played on the other end of the floor, forcing those 17 turnovers?
Well, that was the game for us. Those extra 10 possessions we got were because, again, we went back and scrubbed it out when we got back, and we know some of those shots we've got to make them. But hey, that's part of the game. But the way we did do what we did defensive, we had three really critical breakdowns late when we were up. And we talked about that. You know, we had no pass transition basket, overran a closeout, and then we missed a blockout that we survived. But you're always trying to get better. But the fact is, you know, from start to finish, our guys were locked in, and they did not let the fact that we were missing shots affect us on the defensive end, and that was really the difference in the game.
Tennessee coach Rick Barnes joining us. You know, Rick, you and I had so many conversations when you were at Texas. You had such a great run there and a long run there. Before the game with Texas, you said you would, quote, rather be playing someone else, and to quote, other than the program where you were so successful. Given the relationships you must still have with members of their staff, what was it like for you to go up against them? And because you were there so long, did that win carry any additional personal significance?
You know, Jim, I've been away from Texas for 9 years, but Chris Del Conte, the AD there now, he and I started talking about coming back, and when the Irwin Center was going to be closed down, and you know what, I did that really for my grandchildren, and because I wanted my grandson to have a chance to sit on the bench with me, and I said I'll play the game if he can sit beside me on the bench, and he did, and they won that game, and they returned the game the following year here in the Food City Center. We won it, and then this year. But you really think about it, those guys, for the most part, the guys on the bench had been with me longer than my current staff, and they know me. I watched those guys grow up as well as when I was growing up. And then Chris Ogden was the very first high school player we recruited at the University of Texas, and he's been on both of my staffs there and came here and became a head coach and then went back to Texas. And he went back along with Rodney and those guys. Their thing was they wanted to get our family back together, which I'm proud of that. And again, it's tough. I'm not going to sit here and tell you it's not, because I've got so much respect for those guys because they helped me along the way in ways that you can only imagine. But again, I would prefer not to do that, but it seems like that's something that the NCAA likes to do. They like to put those stories together.
That's what they're here for. They love that. Rick Barnes joining us. You know, Rick, I'm sure my listeners right now are like, enough, Rome, get to Creighton. But you just said something interesting to me, and it kind of hits home because we are now, my wife and I, Janet, we're now empty nesters. So we've got one son who graduated from Wisconsin this past year, and I've got another one that we sent to Boulder who's a freshman. So it's all so interesting and so different. I'm really curious, what was it like for you to have your grandson on the bench?
Well, I mean, I love him, you know, dearly, and I think it speaks volumes for our program that, you know, wasn't worried about one thing that would happen on the bench that I wouldn't want him or certainly his mother wouldn't want him to be a part of, and I think that goes back to our kind of the players that we have here and what they've done here to try to really build a program at the University of Tennessee. But you know, as you get older, Jim, you know, you realize, I mean, what we do with basketball, that's what we do. That's our job, but that's not who we are. And who we are really the people around us, the people that have been a part of our life, people that God's brought into our lives. And I'm just thankful and blessed that God's brought so many wonderful people into my life, and certainly so proud of my family and my son, my daughter, father, son-in-law, and daughter-in-law for the kids that they're raising. And it really is honestly one of the most important things in my wife, Candy, and I's life now.
Rick Barnes, my guest. Rick, that's such a key point what you made. It's not the first time I've heard that, but it's so, so important. Quote, basketball is what we do, but it's not who we are. Is that something you've always known, or is that something that maybe took you a minute or two to figure out?
Oh, no, I drifted away from that where I'm somewhat made it an idol, and I hate myself for it. I've gone back and apologized to players in the past because, you know, our motto here is it's not about me, and the times in my life when I look back on it, when I made it about me, it was really just selfishness on my part. And I'm just blessed and lucky that my daughter and son had a talk with me and told me where they thought I was from a standpoint with my relationship with God. And I knew they were right. I wish I could go back and do over, but I can't. But from that point forward, I said, I'm going to live every day I can to be an example for Christ and see where that leads us.
Interesting, right? It sounds like the family did a little basketball intervention.
They did that. That is a true statement.
We're talking to Rick Barnes. So the club is still far from a one-man show. Like, you think about Dalton Connect. In fact, you and I spoke last time. We talked about his backstory. You knew that he could score before he got there, but did you know what kind of a monster you were truly getting in him? I mean, did you see him coming in and just taking over as many games as he has?
No, not at all. And I don't think he saw that either. Jim, when we were talking, he simply said to me, I want to be part of a program, a winning program. Would love to play in the NCAA tournament, but most importantly, I want to get better as a player and do what I can do to help the team win. He never once asked about an NIL, didn't ask about how many minutes he's going to play. He said, I want to be a part of it. And after coming here, you know, we knew he had some other visits set up. He was supposed to go to Indiana. From there, I think he was supposed to go to maybe Kansas and maybe North Carolina was on, and someone else was on the radar too. But he left, called the next day, and said, "This is I want to be a part of the program." But no way could we expect what he did. And he would tell you the same thing. I was talking to him yesterday, and I said, have you ever had games where you score like that? He said, I had a couple, but nothing like this. And because I'm talking to him about the light right now, because there's so much focus on him, and I want him just to stay calm and who he is, not let it get overwhelming by him. And he's such a great kid, and he wants to do well. But, I mean, he couldn't imagine it, and I can't even imagine myself the spotlight that's been on him, how he's handled it the way he has, because he's never had the kind of attention that he's gotten the last couple months, and he's handled it in just a magnificent way.
I think that's such an awesome point you just made. Like, is he just built for it? Did he learn that? Did you help coach him on that? How is he handling all that?
Well, you know what? I think the thing is, I think he's playing the game for the right reason. He keeps talking about, and I say this simple, he's very simple in his approach to things. You know, he's a very humble person. If you met his family, you would understand who he is. But he loves the game. Like, I can tell you, we're off today. We practiced yesterday. I can assure you, last night at somewhere between 9:30 or 10 o'clock, he was in the gym shooting the basketball. And at 10:30, quarter 11, he was in the ice tub. I can assure you that, and it will happen again today. He's just focused on what he wants to do as a player. And it's been hard. I mean, you know, I've asked him to really play defense in a way that no one's ever asked him to do it. And yet, offensively, I mean, now, hey, you know as well as I do, you got a guy that can do that. You start scheming to try to get him the ball, but you also know your opponent's trying to scheme from him not getting it and putting pressure on him. So he's had to adjust to different kind of defenses, some of it being very physical, some of it just being double-teamed, some of it with 10 guys looking at him, I mean, 10 eyes looking at him. And, it's really a real testament to he and his family for him to stay as humble and as calm as he has through all this.
Hey, Rick, I'm inspired. I love that. I love hearing that. I think that's great. So before I let you go, you've got Creighton coming up, and obviously that's a team that is tournament tough. They've got a number of key guys back from last year's Elite Eight team. Anything jump off the film as you prepare to battle them as you watch and do your research?
Well, before we even started, I've got so much respect for Greg McDermott. You know, he was at Iowa State, and when I was at Texas, and we coached against each other, he is, first of all, just one of the nicest, most wonderful people you'd ever want to be around, but a great basketball coach. I mean, a great basketball coach. Offensively, I mean, every time I coached against him, I took something from the game because he's terrific. He really is, but he knows his team, and you know they don't foul. They believe in the three or the layup, and they'll maybe shoot a few mid-range jumpers. But the fact is, they extremely well coached, and we're going to have to play great basketball to move on.
No doubt about that. He's going to be on the show a little bit later on today, and I agree with everything you just said. He is a great coach. He's a great dude. They're a very good player. However, they have to deal with you guys as well. That is a great, great matchup, a Sweet 16 matchup on Friday in Detroit. Rick Barnes is the head coach of Tennessee. Rick, I appreciate you again. I appreciate the relationship, and thanks so much for making time. That was great, Rick. I really appreciate it.
Again, as always, appreciate you, and God bless you.
You too, Rick. Thank you so much. Rick Barnes joining us. And he's just another one of those guys who's been coming on since back in the day, back when he was at Texas and doing a great job at Tennessee. 9 years there now. Remember, he led Texas to the Final Four in 2003, 2019 National Coach of the Year, still doing it at a very high level. And they look tough. They look good. That is a great game. Great matchup. All right, so we are open until now and the final segment of the show. Greg McDermott will be joining us then. So get up in here, 1-800-636-8686. What we're going to do is have a topic change. I still want your thoughts on Shohei. Who and what do you believe? Who and what do you not believe? And where do we go from here? And how could that have happened? And how did those two stories change so dramatically? I mean, they're polar opposites. What happened? And did Shohei's people do him all wrong? Were they really that naive? Did they really think that when they found out that ESPN was doing that story, that they were to say, oh, all right, here's what you do. Ipe, talk to him. Go ahead. Do the interview. Let them know you got in too deep and that Shohei is going to bail you out because he loves you. You're his guy. Just do that. That'll be good. No, it won't. You're dealing with an illegal bookmaker in a state where gambling still is not legal. Are you that naive? Are you that dumb? That was your plan? You thought that was going to work? Only to find out that there were so many holes and so many things wrong with that, that they went to the attorneys and lo and behold, we have a totally different story the next day. And a former interpreter lying on the train tracks, just gotten having run over by an Amtrak. And Shohei is saying, hey, I knew nothing. I knew nothing. But now I know something. I know that guy's a crook. I know that guy stole from me. I am shocked. I am sad. Yeah, but I thought that you were wiring the money yourself. At least that's what he said. In other words, here's what I'm getting at. What do you believe? Story A or story B? Do you believe story A or story B? Or is it something in between? Your thoughts. I've got a phone number. Feel free to use it. Before you file your taxes the same old way, consider this offer from Jackson Hewitt. Switch to Jackson Hewitt and they will beat what you paid last year on tax prep. Even if you filed online, another reason to say, "Hugh yeah!" to Jackson Hewitt. They guarantee your max tax refund. Ain't nothing to it. Switch to Jackson Hewitt and pay less for tax prep. Guaranteed. Proof of prior year payment required when filing. New clients only at participating locations through April 7th. Terms at jacksonhewitt.com.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
So everybody's got to be upset about something, right? Here's something else that people are getting upset about. My question is, why do you have to be so upset about something? Why? Why are you always upset about something? And in reality, does this really impact you or your life in any great way? At Adam Schefter on X writes, NFL is planning to play another game this year on Christmas Day, which is on a Wednesday. So a Wednesday Christmas Day game coming. So this, I haven't even gotten to the other change yet. The new hip drop tackle. We're not even there yet, and already people are freaking out about this. But not NFL fans. Pretty much everybody else is. NFL fans to a certain extent. Again, Adam Schefter reporting the NFL is going to play another game on Christmas Day, which falls on Wednesday, so a Wednesday Christmas Day game is coming. So, who's upset? I have a better question. Who's not upset? Me. Tommy, you don't seem like you're too upset. Alvy, are you upset? No. We're not upset. But I'll tell you who is. NBA fans. The association fans are upset, saying it's encroaching on their Christmas Day turf. You know, because the NBA is all about it. Ears is pissed. Well, I'll bet you Ears is pissed. Ears thinks that he owns Christmas. Like he somehow bought the rights to Christmas. Because, you know, the NBA is all about that Christmas Day game. They can't wait to let you know what the Christmas Day game is when the schedule drops. Guarantee Ears is pissed. And I guarantee Roger Goodell doesn't give a damn. You know why? The NFL doesn't give a damn. They're going to do whatever the hell they want, whenever the hell they want. And the last thing they're concerned about is how Ears and the association feels about that. College football fans also have their concerns. They're worried that it's going to end up interfering with their new expanded playoff. And then you've got some other people who are concerned, NFL fans, concerned about player safety since they added another midweek game. So people are upset. Do you really think the NFL cares about any of that? Do you think they care about Ears and how he feels? Do you think they care about the college game and how that's going to affect their expanded playoff? Do you think they care about another game midseason or midweek? Well, of course they do, Rome. That's why they keep changing the rules. They keep changing the rules in the name of player safety. Yeah, you know why that is? Money. Money. They want the players available. Believe me, if they could, they'd play games every day of the week. Never mind Thursday and Sunday. They'd play 7 days a week if they could. Anyway, something else for you to get worked up on. I would advise you try something different. Instead of looking for things to get pissed about, rewire your mind to be optimistic, positive, happy. Look forward to things. Turn it on its head. Oh, cool. A Christmas Day game. I like that. Christmas is a blast. We get up. The kids run downstairs. They tear open their presents. Then we have football. Frank says, the first press conference was all the truth. Rich guy helps close friend that made a really bad choice. Then LA Dodgers realized what happened and what was said. Now they have to protect their investment. Time to throw the interpreter under the bus. I think that's a reasonable reaction. I think that those close to him, if you want to argue that point of view, if you believe the first story, story A, and I tend to believe story A more than story B, I tend to believe story A more than story B. It makes a hell of a lot more sense. But if you believe that, it shows you how naive they were in thinking that they could just run the interpreter out. Like, they find out ESPN's working on this piece. It's coming whether we like it or not. So you know what we do? We're not going to get out in front of it, but we want to make sure that we have our side of the story. So let the interpreter go tell their side of the story. Just tell them. I got in too deep. I was gambling. I was chasing. Next thing I know, I owe a lot of money. So I went to Shohei, and Shohei was not happy. Shohei was not pleased with me, but Shohei said he'd pick me up, and he would pay for it. However, the money had to go from his account. He would not give the money to me because he was fearful that I would gamble even more. So red flags everywhere. Here's the thing. Why did they change the story? Even if Shohei did not, thank you, Alvin, even if Shohei did not bet, and most importantly, did not bet on baseball, but was only picking up his dude, him wiring money from his account to an illegal bookmaker still makes him liable. He's in trouble for that. So they're trying to make the entire thing go away. And the way to make the entire thing go away is by saying he knew nothing about it. He didn't know a damn thing about it. That guy had the gambling problem. That guy stole his money. That guy tried to pay down the debts. That guy was not fully transparent in letting Shohei know what was going on. I think some of that's true. But some of that is not true in my mind. I find some of that very hard to believe. Again, I'm going to ask the question. Like this guy says it. Matt, right now, why are we acting like the only way to translate Japanese to English is through a human interpreter? He could use his iPhone to translate at all ever. Yeah, I'm not acting like that. I'm the one saying this is how absurd this is. That Shohei's handlers are saying that the only way they could get information, they couldn't go to Shohei directly because he doesn't speak English. And by the way, I'm guessing he speaks a little bit of English and has a basic understanding. But you're telling me all the information is being funneled through ePay, back and forth. And that's what you're relying upon. You're going to rely on that guy over there who lied about going to UC Riverside to give you the information you need and to give him the information he needs, and he's a $700 million man. I mean, stop with that. That makes no sense at all. This guy's got a point. Hey, Jim, let me get this straight. Shohei's interpreter is the only one who can explain to Shohei what's going on. And the interpreter spent a bunch of money out of Shohei's account without him knowing about it for a while. Sounds familiar. My wife has to explain what is going on to me, especially when we watch her TV shows together, The Bachelor, The Masked Singer, etc., or we go out with her friends. Also, I am always finding money missing when I balance the checkbook. Does this constitute, quote, massive theft and fraud? John in Illinois.
Hey, John.
Good take, John. And finally, at Apple Pasta, dear Jim, I believe that ePay went to Shohei and asked him to cover his debts. Then Shohei's legal team learned what happened and said, not a good look. Time to throw ePay under the bus. I do not believe he bet on baseball. All right, there's a straight take. I like it. I think something like that, a version of that story, is probably the closest to the truth. I think that they were very naive. I think Shohei is naive. I think Shohei, maybe he didn't even know what he was doing. I could see that line of thinking whereby this guy got in too deep, $4.5 million in, had no way out, and went to Shohei. And Shohei probably was like, dude, are you that dumb? All right, I got you. You're my boy. We'll figure this out. Who does the money have to go to? I'm just hypothesizing. And Shohei would have no idea that that's illegal. You can't wire money to an illegal bookmaker. I don't know. ePay could have told him anything, right? ePay could have said, hey, Shohei, I got a problem here. I owe money, and they're telling me they're going to break both my legs. Or my family's in jeopardy. My mother, I mean, who knows? Who knows? We know that the money, it's not like he could use the money to say there's an illness in my family because the money was wired to a bookmaker. But who knows what he told Shohei? And who knows what Shohei knew? Shohei again would say to you, I didn't do any of it. I didn't know about it until that Wednesday. I did not do it. I didn't move that money. Well, somebody who had information to get into his account and move that money. I don't know. My bottom line is this. There are so many holes in this story. But I think deep down, I'm not breaking out the tinfoil. I do not think Shohei bet. I've got nothing to prove that with. I just don't think he bet. I don't know the guy, but he doesn't seem like a guy who'd be running around betting soccer, betting basketball, betting anything that moved. College football. I mean, Shohei just does not seem like a big SEC guy to me. He said yesterday, I don't bet on any sports. Never mind baseball. I don't bet on any sports. I tend to agree with that without knowing the guy. He doesn't seem like he's about a lot of things other than his swing, his bullpens, his dog, his wife. And I don't know what else. Where do you see this guy? Where do we see this guy? We don't see him on the red carpet. We don't see him out at local establishments. I really think that's what that guy's about. Now, I've never spent any time with him. I think he's about baseball, his swing, his bullpens, his dog, his wife that the Dodgers didn't even know about. I have a very hard time this guy sitting around looking at the lines, looking at the props, and getting down heavy on college basketball and the NBA and soccer. Now, Ipe, on the other hand, because he's been lying out his ass about everything, I could see that guy getting hooked and needing a way out. I really don't think, though, that Shohei bet on baseball. I don't think he bet at all. But I really don't think he bet on baseball. That'd be the dumbest thing ever. The initial story, remember, was Ipe met this bookmaker at a poker game in San Diego. I don't think Shohei, I could be wrong, but it seems to me Shohei would not be showing up at random poker games in San Diego. Somebody would have a picture. Shohei's very careful about where he goes. I think that they went with the original story. The original story was not a good story, and they had to kill that thing and shut it down and run their dude under the bus, and there's your casualty. Amber in Portland is in. Quote, I hate to break it to ears, but I'd rather watch an NFL game on Christmas or any day for that matter than anything brought to you by the association. Can you hear what I hear, ears? That's the sound of football on Christmas. War Lady Clones.
War Lady Clones.
And Roy Munson, quote, blame all of this on Dave Roberts. No control. I mean, that's funny, but I'm shocked that hasn't become a thing. I'm shocked that some of you morons aren't blaming that on Doc. Hey, blame it on Doc. He's lost control of the clubhouse. It's Doc's fault. Because everything is. When they win, he gets no credit. When they lose, or there's a major, major baseball gambling scandal, that's on Doc. Hey, Jim, why don't we wait a year or so before passing judgment on Shohei? If he is a degenerate gambler at heart, in a year or so, he's going to be telling the Dodgers to waive off that deferment so he can pay Michael Jordan off and get out from under those debts. And finally, the feds need to spend more time investigating Ipe. Priorities, get to the bottom of this stat. Signed, P. Diddy on a plane heading to parts unknown. Jake in NYC. Where is P. Diddy? We know he's on that G5 somewhere. Is he in New York? Is he in Antigua? DJ and I went to Antigua once. Antigua is amazing. Antigua was amazing. We went once, and we're driving down this dirt road, and there's nothing amazing about Antigua. Nothing. Nothing, really, honestly. We come from the airport. We're driving down these dirt roads, and I'm like, that was an awfully long flight, DJ, to take me to these dirt roads. And then all of a sudden, the car takes a turn, and there are all these trees. And behind the trees are a gate, and the gate opens up, and holy crap, paradise. Like this insane resort, this insane beach, everything. Antigua ruled. I could see where he might direct the jet there. I don't know what their extradition laws are like. I was hoping they weren't going to let me out. Of course, I was never accused of sex trafficking or any of the other abhorrent stuff that he's been accused of. So, no, I don't know. What do you want, Albie? I'm talking about P. Diddy here. Can't you hear? Albie's got the music coming up like, dude, you got to get out. This is not the time. Especially since you're off topic and off market. Anyway, I don't know where he is. I don't know if he's in L.A. I don't know if he's in New York. I don't know if he's in Antigua. I don't know what kind of range there is on that G5 before they have to regas. I don't know. But I do know that Albie's getting pissed.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
To thank you for 40 unforgettable years, Dell Technologies is celebrating with anniversary savings on their most popular tech. Save on select next-gen PCs like the XPS 13 Plus, powered by Intel Core processors and more. Save right now at Dell.com/deals. Hey, I'm kind of curious. What are y'all doing for spring break? What are you all doing for spring break? I asked the question because Rogan Loam made it home. Jake Rome's in the real world right now, so he does not get a spring break. Rogues does. Rogues is in his freshman year at Boulder. He's home running around with his dudes, spending time with Dodger Jano. They're going to the Sweet 16 at the Crypt on Thursday. How about the rest of you? What's it like having your college kid home? Because I know some of you are in that same exact boat. Do they want nothing to do with you? Do you have to make them go to dinner with you? Do you have to make them sit down and actually talk to you and engage with you? Or are they out running around? And they do pretty well with rules. They go away to college and there are no rules. And then they come back home and there are rules. Lug's a great kid, though. He's handling it pretty well. All right, 1-800-636-8686. Here is another bit of breaking news at Rap Sheet. On X, quote, the Cowboys and quarterback Dak Prescott have a mutual understanding of his contract situation, sources say, with no offers from Dallas, despite him being in a contract year. Owner Jerry Jones said, quote, we are where we are, locked and loaded for this year, end of quote. No indication a deal is coming. Hey, Jerry, as always, thank you very much for clearing that up. What does that mean? God, this guy, every single day he gets more and more difficult to understand. We are where we are, locked and loaded for this year, but no indication a deal is coming. Locked and loaded for this year is about as convincing as we're all in. So, does the guy get a new deal or not? And if he gets a new deal, what's it going to cost? Once again, let me read that. The Cowboys and Dak Prescott have a mutual understanding of his contract situation, sources say, with no offers from Dallas, despite him being in a contract year. Owner Jerry Jones said, we are where we are, locked and loaded for this year. No indication a deal is coming. So you have a mutual understanding? Why do I have a feeling that Dak does not understand this as well as you do, Jerry? How could there be a mutual understanding if he's in a contract year with no contract coming? He understands that? Or what? You convinced him that he flamed out in the first round and was beaten by a quarterback who had never been in the playoffs before. Therefore, he can sit his ass down and wait. He understands that?
What do you mean?
He understands being a lame Dak quarterback?
Done.
Did you break out your notepad and doodle and diagram and draw a bunch of lines to explain to him what that means? Hey, Cowboy fan, does any of this make you feel any better about the coming year? You've got all these teams around the league taking big swings, doing what they think they have to do to put themselves in position to make their run, and you get the Cowboys sitting on their hands, not doing anything, and having their owners say, we're all in, we're locked and loaded. He's got all these phrases that suggest just the opposite. Locked in to what? Locked and loaded for what? All in for what? What have you done? All right, we're coming right back. Open phones to start hour number three. And Greg McDermott coming up at 11:40. Stay tuned.